KSL at Night was recorded and produced this afternoon. KSL at Night. Some of Utah's top political specialists join a roundtable on the day's biggest stories. KSL is at 102.7 FM and on every smart speaker when you say play KSL News Radio.
Welcome to KSL at Night. It is Monday, April 22nd. This is your host, Taylor Morgan. And I am not alone tonight. Breaking news, we have new co-hosts. But before that, listeners, speaking of breaking news, you can sign up to receive breaking news alerts directly from KSL News Radio sent to your mobile device, your phone, simply by texting the word breaking to 57500. Again, sign up for updates about breaking news from KSL News Radio by texting breaking to 57500. So listeners, it is truly going to be a great, great add to this program to welcome Adam Gardner, founder and principal of ASG Consulting. Adam, you have an incredible background working with, not only working with public officials, you yourself have been an elected official, perhaps the nerdiest office possible in Utah.
You can take pride in that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're someone who cares deeply about policy. You and I think, get excited about some of the same things and areas. So really excited to have your insight and your wealth of experience joining the program. Welcome to KSL at Night, Adam Gardner.
Taylor, really excited to be here. I don't know who recommended me for this, but they should be fired.
Taylor. It wasn't me.
All right, we'll edit that out. So I want to thank you for having me on. This is a real treat for me. I have held the nerdiest office in the state. I was the Salt Lake County recorder. If you remember a few years ago, it was held by Gary Ott, and he was diagnosed with dementia and Alzheimer's, and actually his family had to sue to resign the office on his behalf.
Oh.
So there was a big scandal a few years ago in 2017. It was really messy. And so I ran against 9 other people for that spot and was elected. And when I was elected, KSL did an alert. Adam Gardner was elected the Salt Lake County recorder. And I looked at my wife and I said, this is the only time in history that the recorder's office will merit a blurb.
Well, I will say credit to you. Following the scandal, which did generate a lot of headlines, mm-hmm. right? And following your election, everyone promptly forgot about the Salt Lake County Recorder's Office, which I think
that's what we wanted.
That is a real testament to you and your public service. So well done on that front. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you do day by day. And then I'd love a taste of personal life. What do you do for fun when you're not lobbying legislators up at the Capitol, Adam?
So I'm going to start with that because I love hanging out with my family. I've been married to my wife, Katie, for 11 years. I have 4 boys.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So they're 11, 8, 4, and 1. And they're crazy. They're one is my youngest. We are done.
Okay.
I say he's my one and done.
Yeah.
We love hanging out together. We love taking trips together. We love going to Disneyland. We love going to Zion, to Arches, and just anywhere we can get away for a weekend is what we love to do for fun. Day to day, I've really been fortunate to work for some of the most knowledgeable folks in politics in Utah, local government, and really the country and the world. I started my career off working for Congressman Rob Bishop. I interned in his office in Washington, D.C., and then I ran his campaign and then later worked in his congressional office and had a great time working for him and learning from him. He was a high school teacher for 30 years, and so he loved really just being a mentor and helping me kind of understand my way through the Utah's political system. And you know what I've realized is that Utah is a place where you can't burn bridges in politics.
It's so true.
You have to, in my day job, I'm a lobbyist. I work for, government affairs. It is one of those professions where you have to be honest and tell the truth to people. Because if you lie to a legislator, or you stab somebody in the back, they're never talking to you again.
That's so true.
And you don't get many clients when you can't, talk to legislators.
Yeah. In my experience, honesty and sometimes, you know, confronting the facts, but being forthright and honest is so much better in the long run. That's not breaking news, right? That's obvious stuff. But when it comes to politics,
especially nowadays,
yeah, I think our listeners also maybe some of them share a sense of cynicism when it comes to politics these days. We need more honesty and transparency in our politics, and so that's a great take. Appreciate that. You spent some time also working for Senator Mitt Romney in his district office. I believe you led the district office for Senator Romney. Tell us about that and what kind of experiences you had.
That's been one of the most memorable experiences of my life is working for Senator Mitt Romney. Getting to learn from him and talk to him every day. I was hired to set up his Senate office in the state of Utah. So we had 12 employees in the state. We do casework. I mean, if you have an issue with getting your passport, or if you're a veteran who's not getting their benefits, that's what these local offices do. All right. We were totally on your side. If you have an issue with the federal government, and everyone has an issue with the federal government, we were there to help. Yeah. And so that was really fun. Some of the things that we got to work through, though, were pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Once in a generation, once in 100 years, two impeachments and with Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Working through COVID. Mitt Romney's office was the first office to completely shut down, and every other Senate office followed really quickly thereafter, all kind of going home for a few weeks and then coming back and getting to talk to him every day and hear how his mind works and the strategy that was kind of always in his brain was really fascinating for me. And it kind of allowed me to look at things in a different way. That's really helped in my current job.
Well, that insight I think is going to be so fun and so interesting for our listeners in the future, as we get into the political news of the day, as we get into some of these issues, that experience to drop on and the stories that you'll be able to share. I really am excited and looking forward to all of that, Adam. Quickly, we have maybe a minute or so left here in your intro segment, introducing new KSL at Night host Adam Gardner, listeners to the program. Adam, what is one thing that listeners just may not know about you? What is one thing about Adam Gardner, not necessarily a secret, but one fun, quirky, personal point of information?
Oh my gosh, I am a nerd when it comes to reading and listening to Audible. And I like anything. I am the guy that judges a book by its cover. If it's got a cool cover and I'm hearing people talk about it, that's what I'm reading next.
Best book you've read in the last couple months?
The Coddling of the American Mind.
Oh.
It was written by two Democrat professors that talked about how kids are being coddled too much and not prepared when they get into college in real life.
Yeah.
What life is going to be like.
Oh, wow.
And it really changed the way I parent and view kind of the next generation. And anyway, so I'll read anything. Biographies, I'll read suspense, I'll read Lord of the Rings, whatever. You
love
throw
it
at me, I'll listen to it.
Very good. All right. I might have to pick up the one you just mentioned there. Adam Gardner, welcome to the program. So excited to have you. Principal founder, ASG Consulting. Listeners, we have a great show lined up for you tonight. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, we're going to talk about some of the huge, huge political races that will be decided at convention at the Utah Republican Party State Convention this coming Saturday, April 27th. Listeners, that conversation right after this break.
KSL at Night.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. This is Taylor Morgan here with Adam Gardner. Adam, it is that time of year. It is convention and campaign season. Coming up this Saturday, April 27th, is the big one. It is the Republican Party's state convention. Also, to be fair, no disrespect to the Utah Democratic Party, they are also holding their state convention this coming Saturday, April 27th. However, I think it is fair to say that the big, big races will really come up at the Republican Party convention this Saturday. So that's what we're going to get into this segment. Which of these races, Adam, are you watching the most closely?
You know, I think what's on everybody's mind is the U.S. Senate race. And that seat to who's going to replace Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of really good, really credible candidates that have filed to run for that seat. You have John Curtis. He's been kind of a beloved congressman from the 3rd District for a long time, former Provo mayor. He's running, and his story is interesting because he said he wasn't going to run.
Yeah.
He even wrote an op-ed saying that he wasn't going to run, and now he's back in the race and arguably top of the leaderboard.
Yep. Polling has shown him ahead, perhaps not by as much as some would have expected, but still polls, recent polling has shown John Curtis with a bit of a lead.
And you also have, former Speaker of the House, Brad Wilson,
yeah,
who was well-liked on Capitol Hill and well-liked in his district, and now he's taken the plunge.
And he started early. He has been running for U.S. Senate for a year now.
This week, it's been a year he's been running for office, raising money. He's put a lot of his own money into running for Senate.
Yeah.
Put a ton of his own, I think,
a ton.
More than
a lot of candidates. A lot of candidates in various Republican races have put in a lot of their own money. We have national super PACs also spending millions of dollars
which
here
in Utah.
Which
we don't typically see in a primary season.
Yeah.
These national PACs really
especially going
to
into convention. We've had outside national money coming into the state to communicate to and influence Republican Party state delegates. That's also, I think, something that is a rarity.
You
right?
have Orrin Hatch's son, Brent Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
Throwing the Orrin in the middle name, which is pretty smart.
Well, and to jump in the some of the latest polling, he actually was in second place behind John Curtis, ahead of Brad Wilson, I think in part because 14% of Utah Republicans didn't realize that his father had passed away.
Isn't that kind of crazy?
Yeah. So he's starting off with some name ID, and I don't mean to be cheeky there, but I think
he's using Orrin for a reason.
That's exactly right.
He knows that it's going to bring that name ID.
Yeah.
That those people that loved his dad, they're going to associate him with that name and vote for him.
Yeah.
But right now you have John Curtis in first place, Brent Orrin Hatch, and then kind of tied for third, you have Riverton Mayor Trent Staggs and former Speaker Brad Wilson.
Yeah.
And Trent Staggs has really tried hard to kind of go as far to the right as possible.
Yeah.
I want to be the ultra MAGA guy. He's had Matt Gaetz, Congressman Matt Gaetz, under ethics investigation that came
visited.
To Utah.
Senator Tommy Tuberville, former Auburn head coach, also visited and did an event.
He was in town.
Yeah.
He's doing something tonight, I think, with Charlie Kirk, the Turning Point USA guy. I mean, he is trying to occupy that lane.
Yeah.
What's really interesting in these big races, Taylor, is you see everyone sees an open field, and you kind of have to pick your lane of which, where am I going to go?
And these open seats for these big offices, for a U.S. Senate seat, these don't come around very often,
especially
in Utah. And so we have that domino effect, right, where the vacancy, the forthcoming vacancy by your former boss, Senator Mitt Romney, has led not only to the open seat for the U.S. Senate position, but also for the 3rd District. Because as you mentioned, Congressman John Curtis announced that he will not be running for the 3rd District, instead running for U.S. Senate. That leads to an open field for that congressional office, which has a very crowded field also. 11 total Republicans, Adam, vying for the Republican Party nomination.
Who are you seeing kind of move to the top?
So this is interesting. We know that 3 of those 11 Republicans have guaranteed their spot on the June Republican primary ballot. The other candidates, the other 8, are all hoping to get at least 40% or more at convention this Saturday so they have a chance to also be on that Republican primary election ballot. The one takeaway, the one thing that I really will be interested to see is how Brent Orrin Hatch performs at convention on Saturday. We know that he attempted to gather signatures to qualify for a primary, but he fell short. He didn't get enough signatures. So now he is going to convention to try to win over delegates who don't really like candidates who get signatures. It's a bit of of a test among delegates at convention, or it has been in the past.
And in the past, Mike Lee has always gathered
signatures.
But he says, I don't like it.
Trevor Lee from Davis County declared his intent for signatures. Candidate for Utah Governor Phil Lyman declared his intent for signatures. So more and more candidates are doing signatures. However, it is still a thing with state delegates in the Republican Party.
Now, there's only 4,000 state delegates. Only 4,000 people are allowed to vote.
It's about a half of 1% of all active registered Republican voters in Utah.
So the number is very small, and these are the people that are voting for who our next senator is going to be. And so the point that you brought up with Brent Orrin Hatch is pretty amazing, because if you just look at this strategically, he's going to be thinking, okay, I need to get at least 40%. Who do I think are the top two people that are going to knock me out? So what then happens is you start to look at all the hate mail that comes through. And I am a state delegate, and I get probably 5 or 6 mailers a day.
Yeah.
Some of them are huge. They clog your mailbox. And I look at every single one of
them. How many text messages a day do you get?
I probably get 15 to 20.
I was a county delegate, and I'm so glad that is over. But
it's a lot.
It is a lot.
I mean, campaigns are really not welcome to shoot these many texts.
Yeah.
You just stop reading them. You just, everything becomes junk. And so you look at who's getting the most hate mail. And in my mailbox, it is John Curtis and Trent Staggs. Mm. And just purely from what's going to happen next, I assume that those candidates that don't think that they're going to be able to qualify by going through the convention system are the ones, their super PACs are paying for this hate mail.
Interesting.
Because when you read the bottom of it, it doesn't say paid for by this candidate. It says paid for by Freedom for America, We Love America, and our troops PAC.
Of course. Yeah. Okay. Lightning round. I think the Senate race is going to be so interesting. We also have that open seat for the 3rd congressional district. We have 9 Republicans vying for that nomination. We know that we have 2 candidates who have secured their spot on a primary election ballot. What are you watching when it comes to the 3rd district race this Saturday?
What's been interesting is Case Lawrence, who is a political unknown.
Yeah.
He owns a couple of trampoline parks across the state.
We love those here.
My kids love trampoline parks. He's someone that's put a ton of his own personal money. And according to the polls, it looks like it's kind of working. I'm very interested to see how the delegates respond to him and what his name ID does.
We have Senator Mike Kennedy, Utah State Senator Mike Kennedy, Chris Herod. They have both done the convention only path.
And Mike Kennedy ran against Mitt Romney.
He did. Yeah.
And I think that I work for Mitt Romney and I love Mitt Romney, but he's going to get a lot of kudos and credit with the delegates who don't like Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
They're going to like Mike Kennedy.
Interesting.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how he qualifies for the ballot.
Okay, last race really quickly. We have 30 seconds. The race for Attorney General. Sean Reyes is retiring, not running again. We have Trent Christensen, Rachel Terry, and Derek Brown in the race. Derek Brown has secured the primary with signatures. What do you think happens at convention? Derek Brown, former Republican Party state chair. Will delegates give him a pass on the signatures?
Well, it's interesting because Mike Lee likes him.
Mike Lee has endorsed him.
And he used to work for Mike Lee, and Governor Cox has endorsed him. So he kind of has like the whole establishment taken care of.
Very good point, Adam. Thank you. Great segment. Coming up next, listeners, we need to talk about a bit of a controversy in the Salt Lake City School District that surfaced and was really brought to light by an exclusive KSL News Radio story by Heather Peterson. This is about the implementation of Utah's transgender bathroom bill. And I'll tell you, listeners, you don't want to miss this. Stay right here.
KSL at Night.
Welcome to KSL at Night. I am your host, Adam Gardner. Normally, we'd have Taylor Morgan in the room, but he has left me, and I'm all by myself on my my first show. But we're excited about it. I just want to let you know that if you missed out on any of our shows, remember that you can always go back and listen to it on kslpodcast.com after the show's been aired. So just look up KSL at Night. We're really fortunate to have such amazing reporters here in the state of Utah, and we're here with KSL News Radio reporter Heather Peterson. to talk about one of her stories a few days ago. We KSL had the exclusive on this story, and I if you want to go back and look at this article, it's titled Implementation of New Utah Bathroom Law Causes Confusion in SLC School District. That is an attention-grabbing headline. So tell us how this story came about.
Well, we first we kind of heard about the school district doing these presentations, and we got a tip from a parent that they were not happy about it. They planned a dance party protest instead of going to these presentations for their students, and that tip kind of like led us down this rabbit hole that brought you this story.
I am very interested in dance party protesting, so we'll talk about that in another segment. But tell us, what's the crux of this issue? What was Salt Lake City School District, what were they planning to do? How were they planning to educate the kids of the district?
So their understanding of this law was that they had to inform all students about the new implementation of the bathroom rule. And so they felt that they had to do these presentations, these assemblies, so that every single student got the information. Other districts did not read the law that way. They perceived it as, we're going to address the students who need to be addressed because they're going to have issues with this implementation. And so I think the crux of the issue is how they read the law. And so my understanding of it is that Salt Lake City School District was really trying their best to implement the law the way it was written. And it wasn't exactly necessary, if that makes
sure.
sense. All students didn't necessarily have to be informed. We went back to the law itself and a line item, and it didn't say all students. It just said students. So I think that, I mean, it's really like in the minutia there, but I think their intention was to inform everyone the best they could, but it was just making people uncomfortable.
So it was making people uncomfortable. Did the school district have the training? Are they going to have the training? Did they stop? What was the result of your article?
So after all of this happened, the school district did send out an email to all their administrators that the presentations would be canceled, and instead they were just going to address the students one-on-one, which is what we'd heard other districts were doing. They said that they're going to start working with legislators and with their legal team to truly address how the law should be implemented. And they were no longer going to do these presentations, which obviously made a lot of people happy. So.
And you kind of understand where the confusion comes from, because there's a lot of levels of, I don't want to say bureaucracy, but bureaucracy. So you have like the school district, they're going to interpret it a certain way. You have the Utah State Board of Education, they're going to interpret it a certain way and give guidance to school districts. And then you have what the legislature really meant. And so it kind of gets confusing until stories like this are written or trainings are prepared where everyone can kind of get on the same page. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on there. And we actually on the Friday, Jeff Kaplan's afternoon news, we brought on Kara Berkland, who was the sponsor of the legislation, and she ended up telling us, yeah, I don't know why they would implement it that way. It seems like it causes more problems that way. And so clearly that wasn't her intention behind how she wrote it. But I mean, that's why they have legal teams, right? To like look into the wording of laws and how to figure
right.
out like how to best do this to meet the requirements. But yeah, it's super sticky when you try to figure out, you know, how many layers of people like meant certain things. And yeah, it just got sticky.
Yeah. Heather, this is such an interesting story. Definitely some politics perhaps at play. What kind of reaction have you heard so far from the community, from parents, you know, from others whose children saw the presentation and may have questions about it?
Well, the presentations were not delivered. So, I mean, they did have an email out to parents that would preview the presentation.
Okay.
So parents did see that to kind of like decide how they wanted to proceed on whether their students were going to receive it. But those presentations were then canceled. So, parents were not happy.
So the presentation was provided in advance to parents.
Yes.
And they were able to see it, but then it was subsequently canceled. We know the law doesn't go into effect until May 1st. So now what happens next? What should we expect?
Well, now, those students who should be affected or would be affected by this, who may have to go to a different bathroom than they were previously going to before, they should be talking with their principals, with school administrators, with counselors to figure out solutions that work for them. But it seems like they're handling it much more on a one-on-one basis, and they're cutting out these assemblies that were making parents really uncomfortable. They felt like to receive this information in a group setting would open up a can of worms for bullying and anti-transgender rhetoric. And so they, you know, shut that down. Hmm.
You know, I want to kind of dig a little bit in the weeds here just for our listeners. I think I've done government relations in multiple states, and I hate using other states' websites. Utah has an amazing website, le.utah.gov.
Amen. It is so wonderful.
It's very easy to use. You can go on that homepage at le.utah.gov, and you can type in HB257. That is the bill number. It was sponsored by Representative Kara Berkland of Morgan County, and the Senate sponsor was Senator Dan McKay of Salt Lake County. So you can go on and you can actually read that bill for yourself, and you can see what it says. And you don't have to take our word for it. You get to read that. And luckily we have such great reporters that can kind of help break down some of the issues. Are you seeing any other blowback? Are you seeing any other movement on this issue, or are most school districts just kind of waiting to see what direction is given?
I think that since this story came out and since they canceled the presentations, I haven't seen as much blowback because, I mean, there's obviously going to be dissatisfaction with the law being implemented in any way. But the method of implementation seems to, the controversy surrounding that seems to have boiled down. I think people just want this dealt with in a more private matter and not feel like that if their student is, you know, involved
is struggling
yeah, with this issue, that it's not like in the public sphere.
This is so interesting, Adam, because at the Capitol every year, right, we are hearing both sides of this argument about local control and mandates from the Utah legislature. Here we have an instance where, at least my understanding of it, my opinion of it, is that the legislation that you referenced, Adam, the intention was to give some latitude and some local control to school districts on how they wanted to implement this legislation and how they wanted to convey that to students and what was appropriate. Yet on the other side, they've opened the door potentially to some uncertainty, and that can always maybe be a little bit problematic. So so glad, Heather Peterson, you're here to walk our listeners through it. The story is Implementation of New Utah Bathroom Law Causes Confusion in Salt Lake City School District. It is available on kslnewsradio.com.
Heather, thanks so much for joining us. This is KSL News Radio, KSL at Night, with Adam Gardner and Taylor Morgan. Stick around because we're going to be talking to Cassandra Happy from Wallet Hub to talk about the 10 cities nationally from Utah that are listed as the best small cities to start a small business.
KSL at Night. KSL at Night.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. You're with Taylor Morgan and Adam Gardner. Adam, there has been so much great economic news about Utah over the past month or two. Utah has the hottest job market in the country, according to the Wall Street Journal. Utah has one of the fastest growing economies in the entire country. Turns out Utah has 10 cities out of 1,334 cities nationally, I think, that were ranked.
Pretty amazing.
Utah has 10 cities that have been rated as one of the best cities in the country to start a new business. We really are the startup state. There's no question about it. To talk more about this topic and maybe delve into why Utah is such a good place to start a business, we wanted to bring on Cassandra Happy, a Wallet Hub analyst. Cassandra, welcome to KSL at Night. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're pretty excited about this. What makes Utah so special?
So Utah really stood out in this study as far as the business environment goes. That was one of the three key dimensions we looked at in this study. And that included metrics such as the average growth in the number of small businesses, startups per capita, and the average revenue per business. And when you look at all of those metrics combined, Utah was definitely in the top 10, if not the top 25% in every single metric that we looked at in that particular area.
Cassandra, that's amazing. I'm looking at the list here, and you have ranked number one, Cedar City, Utah, number two, St. George, Utah, and number four, Washington, Utah. So three of your top five are in southern Utah, which is pretty amazing to me. When I read the article, that's what stood out to me most. Is there anything specific about being in southern Utah? Is it different because it's off the Wasatch Front? It's not close to Salt Lake, so they kind of have to, work with each other in such a small town. What's the reason for southern Utah being so high on the list?
I think you definitely hit on some points there. Specifically, when we looked at the numbers, what stood out was the average growth in the number of small businesses in those particular cities. For instance, Washington and St. George both tied for first place in that particular metric.
Wow. Wow.
And also the startups per capita, Cedar City, St. George, and Washington all tied for first place on that metric as well. So I think that's really a good indication that these are just hubs that are really starting to build up. Even though they're small cities, they're definitely starting to build momentum.
I think this is so interesting. And Adam, I think perhaps you were alluding to this, the proximity and accessibility perhaps of outdoor recreation and some of these landscapes that are perhaps a real force of attraction to bring in talent, right? To retain talent, but also to recruit talent potentially to southern Utah. You combine that kind of asset in terms of outdoor recreation and proximity with the business-friendly environment. I think that, I don't know, that is something I would like to delve into a little more.
That's the reason that I would want to go to southern Utah to work.
Absolutely. I'm going down to southern Utah on Wednesday night to go spend a weekend in Zion with my family, right? I would love to live a little bit closer to that part of the world. But Cassandra, what else can you tell us about business-friendly environment here in Utah? Are there specific kinds of regulation or deregulation that make Utah stand out relative to other states? Unlike Florida and Texas and a few other states, we still have a state income tax here in Utah. So what about regulation or business-friendly environment aside from just taxes is significant here?
So I think it's important to just note that even if these particular cities weren't like the absolute top of the list in a particular metric, we looked at so many different metrics and dimensions in the study in so many different locations that when you look at these rank orders, seeing these really great numbers, besides some numbers that maybe you wouldn't think were that great, is just really fascinating. You touched on as far as like corporate taxes, that was one thing that we did look at, and all of the cities in Utah, since this is more of a state-level metric, they ranked 290th overall. But that's out of 1,334
sure.
cities. So
yeah.
it's a really good indication that there's some policies in place that make it a very inviting atmosphere for people who are looking to start a business.
Well, you bring up a good point. You said it was inviting for people that want to start a business. I got to ask, are people living in Cedar City, Utah, or Lehi, Utah, or Eagle Mountain, Midvale, American Fork, are they just living there thinking, you know what? I have this entrepreneurial spirit. I would love to start a business right where I live. Or are people actually moving into Utah to say, these guys have the best regulations, this is where I want to be to start my business?
You know, we really didn't dig too deeply into where this growth was coming from, whether it's, you know, organic or if it's from, being from moving into the state. But I think it is it could very well be that when people see other startups being successful, it can definitely encourage them to take the plunge and maybe pursue that dream of starting up their own business right in their backyard.
Yeah. Cassandra, this study specifically is about small cities, smaller cities. Do we have a sense of what kinds of small businesses do the best in small cities? Is it tech? Is it virtual? Or are we talking retail stores, restaurants? What kinds of small businesses perform the best in these small cities?
You know, we really didn't dig too much into that. But I will say that tech is definitely, you know, the big headline that we see these days as far as startups go, and as more and more organizations implement AI and build up databases of information and customers, that's definitely going to be a growing sector. And I can definitely see that being a big source for startups, even in smaller cities, since it doesn't, you know, with the technology, there's a lot more flexibility typically with work arrangements. So being in a starting in a small city and really being more of a global company isn't that crazy nowadays.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Cassandra Happy from Wallet Hub. You're an analyst at Wallet Hub. Hopefully that is the correct title. Thank you so much for joining us here on KSL at Night. We really put you on the hot seat there. We're very excited about these numbers, and so we've been throwing a lot of tough questions at you. We really appreciate you fielding them and being with us tonight.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Adam, just have a little bit of time, maybe a minute or so left. What are your takeaways from this? What are you thinking?
You know, as I look at this list, one thing that I think is pretty crucial is, like, I'm seeing Lehigh on here, Eagle Mountain, Midvale. You have a lot of places that are really close to Utah's tech hub, to Silicon Slopes. So you can, in Utah, the great thing about Utah, we're not only the best managed state in the country, but if we're number one for entrepreneurs, you can see that if I live in a small town, if I live in American Fork or Cedar City or Washington, when I start my business, I'm not alone. There are others that really thrive. And we have this kind of volunteer mentality here in the state of Utah where they want to mentor you. If you want to start a business, you have so many mentors that will
help
you.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
And you have a lot of access to capital here.
True.
People are willing to take risks in Utah.
And access to education, I think, is key. Right. And it was one of the metrics listed in this study. And, you know, there's something very special happening in Southern Utah. And it's been happening for a while with the growth and everything. Thinking of education, Utah Tech, Southern Utah University in Cedar. This is very special, right? I would not have expected that Utah's highest ranked cities, those three, would all be clustered in that southwestern corner. I think that is super intriguing, and it's something that we'll continue to follow and discuss here on KSL at Night. Coming up next, we are going to be joined by legal analyst, KSL legal analyst Greg Skordis, to give us an update on the latest developments in the Trump hush money trial in New York. That's right after this.
KSL at Night was recorded and produced this afternoon. KSL at Night. Some of Utah's top political specialists join a roundtable on the day's biggest stories. KSL is at 102.7 FM and on every smart speaker when you say play KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. This is Taylor Morgan alongside Adam Gardner, your hosts for this evening. Adam, are you tracking the hush money trial in New York involving former President Trump?
You know, I created an Excel spreadsheet to track all of the trials
with
President Trump. But just a little bit. I'm really excited for today's guests. We get to kind of dig a little bit deeper and find out the crux of the issue here in New York.
Definitely. Well, joining the program now, fortunately for us and you listeners, we have Greg Skordis, KSL legal analyst, joining us here on KSL at Night. Greg, where are you right now? I know you've been in Idaho covering various trials. Or where are you joining us from?
I'm just joining you from my office here in Salt Lake, Taylor.
Oh, okay.
I'm back to work trying to do my day job.
There you go. Well, no, not easy to be KSL legal analyst these days with it seems like a new
trial involving former President Trump every week. What is the latest with the hush money trial that really got underway today, Monday, April 22nd?
You're exactly right. And what happened was this. We thought that it could take a while to select a jury, and the judge set aside last week to do that. Of course, they need 12 jurors. And just like the trial you talked about up in Idaho, the judge thought that we should have six alternates because the trial is supposed to take somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks. So the jury was selected. It took much less time than anticipated. I think 3.5 or 4 days. They've got their 18 jurors in the box. And they started today, fresh start Monday morning, with the opening remarks of both counsels. So the prosecution, the district attorney's office, gave their opening statements about what they intend to prove. The defense gave theirs. And they got so far, Taylor, as to even start calling the first witness. They didn't get very far with it, but we did get at least 30 minutes into the very first witness. And you're right. This is the hush money case.
So, Greg, can you give us a little bit of a rundown of what the actual issue here is? What did Trump do that prosecutors are alleging is illegal?
Now, that's a great question. And that's the crux of the whole case, Adam. So the issue here is, under what circumstances was the porn star Stormy Daniels paid, and how was that accomplished? Trump's own lawyer, this Cohen, who's a convicted liar, let's be honest, he even went to prison, said that the money was funneled through him as attorney fees, that he was sending a bill to the Trump Organization for $35,000 a month for a year, so it was over $420,000, and that it really wasn't for attorney's fees at all, that part of it, $130,000 of it, was hush money to this porn star for an alleged affair with Trump. Now, you know, and some of this involved campaign contributions. So if that's the case and Trump knew about it, that's a huge problem. His attorneys have stated in their opening remarks that other people were dealing with the finances. Trump was out campaigning. He didn't have a part in that. And that's really going to be the crux of the case. What did Trump know? What did he authorize? And what did he pay and how? His own attorney is going to say that he absolutely was involved in it. Of course, Trump's already laid the groundwork for the cross-examination on Michael Cohen by saying he's a convicted liar.
Greg, what are the potential consequences if this jury finds Donald Trump guilty of the charges?
This penalty, and there are several counts, but each count carries up to 4 years in state prison. This is a state case. There are two state cases, New York and Florida, and two federal cases, D.C. and Florida. And this is the state case. So, yeah, he could do – and it's important that state-federal distinction is also important because you can't pardon yourself from a state charge if you're a federal official.
That's interesting,
so,
Greg.
Yeah, if he's convicted of this one, he's going to have to live with it. But, yes, each count carries – and there were numerous checks, so there are numerous counts, but each one carries up to a maximum of 4 years in prison. Not that he would do that. But if he's convicted of multiple felonies, I could certainly see a judge giving him some level of incarceration or certainly probation, that type of thing. But they're very serious charges, and there's a lot of money involved here.
So each check that was written is a count?
Each check that was written, exactly, that was written and was mischaracterized for what it was. So if a check is written and it says legal fees, when everybody knows it's hush money, that's a crime. Now, if in fact there were legal fees performed, and that's another issue. But the checks that are important here are the ones that were mischaracterized and misstated and arguably involved campaign funds. And you can't, yeah. I mean, anybody knows that when you're dealing with campaign monies, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's.
There is a lot of rules that go along with campaign funds.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So you don't get to go down that road.
Yeah. So to drill down on this, the charges involve falsifying the business records, using campaign monies as hush money. Is hush money illegal itself? Greg, not asking for me, of course, but corporations, entities, nonprofits enter into non-disclosure agreements or settlements outside of court all the time, right? That presumably is legal. Is hush money illegal? Is there something on the books specifically in New York that would prohibit the hush money, or is it the misclassification and using campaign money to pay the hush money that is the problem here.
It's the latter. You articulated it great. No, hush money is fine. People do non-disclosure agreements, and even people who get involved with extramarital affairs or things like that, they don't want it to become embarrassing. They don't want their wife to find out. Yeah, here's some money. Go away and keep our secret safe. There's nothing illegal about that. What's illegal is if you mischaracterize what it is. You cook the book, so to speak. And it's absolutely illegal if you use campaign contributions to do that. So, yeah, I mean, we do non-disclosure agreements all the time, and that's fine. That's the purpose of non-disclosure, is that you not disclose what the money was settled for and the amount of money. But you can't lie about it in your record keeping, and you can't use public funds to do that, or campaign funds.
Got it. Last question I want to ask is, if he, let's just say he's convicted, hypothetical, he's convicted. The judge says, you're convicted on all these counts. We're going to sentence you to 1 year in jail. Can he still run for president?
That's the question nobody can figure out the answer to, because, I mean, you can't be president of the United States with certain things on your record. Can you run? I mean, that's who knows? I mean, we're going to have a constitutional challenge in this country like we have never had before, depending on what happens in this trial. This may very well be the only trial that's going to be heard before November, just because the other ones are being stalled out. Yeah. But this one's going now. It's supposed to last through April and May. We'll see what happens.
Greg Skordas, KSL legal analyst. As always, Greg, thank you so much for joining KSL at Night. We would be lost without your expertise and your legal analysis. We'll have you back soon as this case develops, Greg. Thank you again.
I hope so. Thank you both.
Adam, coming up next, a real treat. We are going to be joined in studio here at KSL News Radio by Inside Sources Boyd Matheson to break down some of the big legislation that has just recently passed Congress, specifically.
Something passed Congress?
Yeah. And it turns out, Adam, the U.S. House of Representatives might actually be efficient and bipartisan. Shocking. Listeners, you won't want to miss that. It's after the break.
KSL at Night.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. You are with Taylor Morgan and Adam Gardner. Adam, we now have the distinct pleasure of welcoming into the KSL at Night studio and in the flesh, Boyd Matheson, none other than Boyd Matheson of Inside Sources, every weekday from 1 to 3 p.m. here on KSL News Radio. Boyd, we're so excited to have you here on the show to talk about some very important developments in Congress.
Yeah, a lot of things going on. Actually, some things did go on in Congress, which is a little shift from what we've seen over the last little while.
It seems like people can get along when they need to. Boyd, really appreciate your insights here. Congress, especially the House passed four major pieces of legislation. Politico is calling it a behemoth, $95 billion. Let's just kind of go through that list. Ukraine, $60 billion. Israel, $23 billion. Taiwan and Indo-Pacific security, $15 billion. And, of course, the TikTok divestment and seizing some Russian assets. So maybe that's how we pay for some of this. This was really bipartisan. I'm looking at some of the vote totals here. 311 votes in the House, 366, 385, 360. You just don't see these kind of vote totals nowadays, do you?
No, you don't. You don't see that very often, almost never in these days. And it's so interesting from a process standpoint. So if we kind of set aside whether you think it's a good idea or bad idea for each of those individual bills, the process thing is fascinating to me. And I actually think on Wednesday last week, in fact, Taylor and I talked about this in the hall, that Speaker Mike Johnson became the Speaker of the House on Wednesday of last week, when he rolled these four pieces of legislation out and said, this is the right thing to do in my mind, and this is what the Speaker of the House should do, and if it costs me my job, so be it. And I think at that moment on Wednesday night, he became the Speaker of the House. I actually think he got stronger over the weekend, despite the threats from some of those in the party, because he did the process. And because of that, these numbers are astronauts. And I actually think the numbers are bigger. And Adam, you know this from your time in D.C., that there are those who kind of watch the vote. And as soon as you don't need my vote, I'm going to vote no.
I'm going to flip.
And so I think these numbers are actually a little low. I think there were actually more who would have voted. The people who vote no but pray for yes.
Well, Boyd, you interviewed Speaker Mike Johnson on your show just a couple weeks ago, a week and a half ago. Listeners, you can actually go and listen to that show as well as any other prior recorded show here on KSL News Radio. You can find those at kslpodcast.com after the show's been aired. Listeners, you want to make sure you go listen to Boyd Matheson's interview on Inside Sources with Speaker Mike Johnson. Congresswoman Celeste Malloy also participated. And Boyd, I have to say, I feel like Speaker Johnson is taking your advice. This is something you've been talking about for years when it comes to process and bipartisanship. And what I want to ask you about is the fact that these big four bills, right, that Adam mentioned, the funding for, we're talking Ukraine, Indo-Pacific, TikTok, four big items that were all separate bills.
Yeah.
I think that's really huge. Tell us about why you think that's important.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that the speaker did was rather than having one big thousands and thousands
omnibus.
Of page bill that nobody reads and everybody's frustrated with, it makes it so easy to vote no. It's like, well, I love this, I love that, but man, there's no way I can swallow that pill, so I'm out. It makes it really easy. But by making each of those very focused, he allowed the members of his caucus who wanted to vote for Israel but against Ukraine, they could do that. And that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
I'm really a proponent of we should have single subject bills, none of this extraneous stuff that makes it easier to vote no and prevent good pieces of moving through.
And that's typically been the norm for Congress, for as long as I can remember. What has changed other than Speaker Mike Johnson? Is it just that he's doing things differently?
He is choosing to do it different because he is one of the few that we've seen in a long time who is more concerned about doing what's right, what he feels is right. He's not saying he's right every time. He's saying, but this is what I feel is right. And because of that, he's willing to lose his job. Most of the battles in Washington are not left and right battles.
Right.
It's those in power and everyone else. And what we have to remember is when there's gridlock, it preserves the status quo. It keeps those in power in power. And I have always said, before you vote for any candidate at any level, you should ask the question, would they be willing to lose their job to do the right thing? And Mike Johnson is saying, I'm going to do the right thing. And if it costs me my job, I'm okay with that.
Well, this could be confusing to some listeners. It was to me at the beginning. He could lose his job for bringing something up for a vote.
Yeah.
He's not saying if we pass this bill, like we should pass this bill and I may lose my speakership over it. He just said we're bringing these up for a vote.
Yeah.
Why are there consequences from his own side of the aisle for bringing something up for a vote?
Exactly. It's process, process, process. The process matters. That's why the founders laid it out the way they did. I thought it was interesting over the weekend, former speaker Newt Gingrich came out very strong and saying what Mike Johnson is doing is the job of the speaker.
Yeah.
That is the job. And so don't condemn him because he's doing the job. It's the only way you actually gain any kind of momentum. I also thought it was interesting some of the comments around the fact that if you want better legislation, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
Not hold out and do these all or nothing things.
Well, better legislation and more accountability to the voters. Because
and transparency.
Voters can hold their representatives accountable for how they vote on key issues rather than confusing it all in one giant omnibus bill and playing politics with the process. I want to ask specifically, Boyd, about this aid to Ukraine, $60 billion.
Yeah.
Why is this so important and why is it so urgently needed now?
Well, I think what Speaker Johnson said is right. He believes Vladimir Putin and he believes President Xi of China. That their motives and their incentives and their design for Vladimir Putin, he's going to take Ukraine and he's going to keep going. President Xi in China is going to bring Taiwan back into the motherland. And he believes them. And so saying, look, we need to do this. And at the same time, this is not just throwing money at Ukraine. Most of this money is going to be spent in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's going to be replenishing our own stockpiles, upgrading our own systems, giving them sort of the what we've used before stuff.
Yeah.
So there's actually a lot of positives to that as well.
Yeah.
It's really been kind of beneficial. I went to Ukraine last year.
Yeah.
And we saw some of the war-torn areas of Ukraine, which was really, really humbling. One of the interesting things was the United States saw this as kind of a boon, but I guess it's probably the wrong word. It was advantageous because of what you're talking about. There's different types of technology and weapon systems that can be used in Ukraine that we don't know how they work.
Right.
We don't know how they work in on a battlefield against what type of tank, against drones. And we kind of get to see that play out without any of our soldiers, anyone from the United States dying.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what Speaker Johnson mentioned as well, that he would much rather send bombs and bullets to Ukraine than American soldiers and boots on the ground. And we do have to recognize that thugs and bad guys and dictators are usually very transparent.
Yeah.
They usually tell you what they're going to do, and then they do it. And so we have to have that ability to say, nope, this does matter. This is important. And I think this is an important message, not just for our allies. It's also the message that it sends to our enemies and our adversaries.
That is exactly where I wanted to go, Boyd, because you mentioned thugs and bullies. And I have been very frustrated over the past year because we have allowed these proxy wars to take place. We haven't fully supported our allies. And I've had this sense of frustration that we're going to bury our heads in the sand and let, you know, Russia, China, and Iran, you know, take advantage of our just not participating on the global stage. Does the action by Congress, do you think that changes the equation? Does this change how our allies and our enemies perceive us?
Yeah, no question about it. I think it's a big message to Vladimir Putin and President Xi of China. I think it also is important for Ukraine and for Israel to say, hey, the U.S. said they'd be with us and they're with us. And that's always going to be a question. I think the big challenge for the administration, the Biden administration, has really had this philosophy of de-escalation at any cost.
Yeah.
And sometimes that ends up getting things a little bit worse. And you have to remember that hope is important in all of this. Hope is not a strategy. And the votes and the dollars and the assets being moved to our allies shows that there is some strategy there, not just hoping that things are going to be okay.
Yeah, definitely deterrence through that strength, right? Well, coming up next, listeners, we are going to talk about the other piece of this, Boyd, and that is TikTok. Speaking of thugs and bullies in China, we have to talk about that. We'll do that next. First, Boyd Matheson, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be
listeners,
with you. Adam, well done.
Tune in to Boyd 1 to 3 p.m. every weekday here on KSL News Radio. TikTok is up next.
KSL at night.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. You are with Taylor Morgan and Adam Gardner. Adam, we were just joined in studio by Boyd Matheson, who hosts Inside Sources here on KSL News Radio every weekday from 1 to 3 p.m. Boyd really truly does have inside sources. As we discussed last segment, he personally interviewed Speaker Mike Johnson just a couple weeks ago, had a great conversation there. As we talked about some of the key legislation coming out of Congress, one of those was a very bipartisan bill on TikTok. And this is a big deal, Adam, and we alluded to it a little bit last segment, but the fact that this TikTok bill was packaged with these national security bills, with billions of dollars in aid to foreign allies.
Yeah, we're really grateful to have Michael Lucci, the founder and the CEO of State Armor Network. I've been very lucky to do some work with State Armor, and they go state by state, also with the federal government, in kind of looking for ways that the Chinese government really is acting adversarial against the United States and states individually. It's something that I don't think a lot of people realize. China actually has a stated strategy to go into each individual congressional district all over the country and actually have and gain influence there. So we're really lucky to have Michael Lucci. Michael, how you doing? Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be on. And I think you really framed that up really well. As you mentioned, the Chinese government has what's called a subnational strategy in the United States, which means they want to build up influence and really the ability to conduct espionage and leverage against state and local officials as a part of a broader influence campaign, but also just for its own purposes, because state and local officials are very powerful. They have very important responsibilities in our federalist system. So I think that the way you laid it out They have a comprehensive whole of government, really assault upon the United States. And what we need is a whole of government response to that assault.
Now, the TikTok ban, last I saw, it was something like only had 58 no votes. The House of Representatives has 435 members. That's pretty much as bipartisan as it gets nowadays. Do you see that as a good thing that the United States, that the House of Representatives is realizing that TikTok is a threat? And Michael, can you tell us why it is a threat?
Yes, I think that that vote is a very good vote. I think that we have seen this. I know that when we look at politics, we see a lot of divisiveness. But what story should be told is that Democrats and Republicans are actually coming together on key national security issues, in particular issues related to China. And you mentioned that that vote went through the House of Representatives. I think it was over 80% support, 90% of one party, 75% of the other party. So super, super majorities of both parties. And I think it's because exactly what you said, they recognize the threat. And so the threat was multifold from TikTok. One, just straight up espionage. There's been broad reporting on how the parent company of TikTok, ByteDance, used the application to spy upon American journalists who, for example, were meeting with TikTok employees to get information. They were triangulating upon those meetings from China. They've done a lot more than that. They can steal every keystroke that you make on your phone if you have the application on your phone. And perhaps more importantly is they control the algorithm that plants content in the minds of young Americans. So TikTok is actually the number one source of news for Americans under 30 years old. And they are being fed based off of an algorithm of a regime that very frankly just hates the concept of the United States of America. The Chinese people are great people, but the communist regime, it's just evil. And they are controlling the algorithm that feeds news into Americans. You probably remember there was this revival of Osama bin Laden last year because there was TikTok viral videos about how we should reconsider the arguments made by Osama bin Laden about how America are evil. But it all has the same angle of undermining United States social unity and national security policy.
Michael, the House previously passed a version of this legislation. We're speaking about the bill that passed the U.S. House of Representatives over the weekend requiring ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, to sell the company. The previous legislation that passed the House put that period at 6 months. It subsequently stalled out in the U.S. Senate. This updated measure puts that sell period at 9 months. Do we know if this has support in the U.S. Senate? Do we expect it to continue going through the legislative process?
There's a tacit agreement that this is going through the Senate and quickly. I believe that I believe that Senator Schumer is actually calling the senators back to take a vote on this broad package. And remember, the TikTok divestment bill goes with the broader foreign aid package that's going out to Ukraine, Israel, et cetera. And so I believe that that's actually going to happen very quickly. I think that the next speed bump, I don't want to make too broad of assumptions, but based on the public statements of the senators and President Biden, this is going to go through. The next speed bump is it's going to go to court where TikTok's going to sue and say it's illegal to force them to divest from ownership, from Chinese communist ownership.
So I got another question for you, Michael. What has been interesting to me is on the presidential election side, when President Trump said on Truth Social that he wanted to make sure that everyone knew, every young person knew that it was Biden that wanted to ban their favorite app, not him, not Trump. Trump loves it. They've kind of done this switch. What happened? What do you make of that?
I think that this issue is just making strange politics, and you're pointing it out. So actually, to be very specific, President Trump issued an executive order to ban TikTok. He issued that executive order. President Biden rescinded that executive order. That was one of the first actions President Biden took, was he rescinded the executive order that would ban TikTok operating in the United States. And so, as you point out, we fast forward and they've kind of reversed positions. I think that fundamentally, I think they both understand that it's a national security threat. They've both at different times spoken to it being a national security threat. And so while President Trump is making comments that are kind of targeting Facebook, and he has an axe to grind with Facebook for a number of reasons, I think that they both fundamentally understand. I think that Democrats and Republicans understand that this is a real threat, and they're coming together on lots of issues like this.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's hugely significant, as we mentioned at the very beginning of the segment, Michael, that this TikTok bill requiring the divestment by ByteDance of TikTok in 9 months, this was passed along with some very significant foreign aid packages. What is the message, right, that the U.S. Congress is sending to China here? What is the message, do you think?
Clearly, Congress is sending a message that they regard the Communist Party, the Chinese government, as a huge threat. And we're dealing with that threat in the context of dealing with other threats. But then that bill gave a little bit of money to Taiwan. And so I think that there is a little bit of an interesting mixed message, not to speak to the specific validity of any part of that appropriation, but Taiwan is getting the least resource. Taiwan faces by far the biggest threat of all of our allies. It's nowhere close. I mean, yeah. No American ally has ever faced a threat like the Communist Party controlling China. They have a huge GDP, huge military. It's bigger than the Nazis and the Japanese combined back in World War II. When you compare it, its size to the United States. So I think that we're showing that we recognize the threat that they present. I would argue that we need to go a little bit further in prioritizing that theater, the Pacific theater, amongst the other theaters that we have to address.
Yeah. Michael Lucci, founder, CEO, and chairman of State Armor, where you are developing and enacting state solutions to global security threats. Michael, thank you so much for joining us here on KSL at Night. We look forward to having you back soon to keep us updated on new developments.
Thank you so much for having me.
Adam, very interesting, very compelling stuff. I'm so glad that we had a chance to speak with Michael. A lot of insight there. Coming up next, we are going to wrap up KSL at Night tonight by having perhaps the most controversial, heated discussion of the evening, Adam, and that is, what is your favorite name for Utah's new NHL hockey team? Listeners, that is coming up right after this.
KSL at Night.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. You're with Taylor Morgan and Adam Gardner. Adam, incredible first show. It feels like you've been doing this for a very long time. So,
well, thank you.
Very well done.
Hours, at least.
We had a lot of great topics tonight. There's a lot happening. Everything from landmark legislation coming out of Congress this weekend to the upcoming state Republican Party convention on Saturday and some huge, huge political races here in the state. But perhaps, Adam, we have saved the most monumental, perhaps the most controversial topic for now. For the last segment of your first show, Adam, first, are you a hockey person, number one? And number two, what is your favorite name for Utah's new NHL hockey team?
Look, I feel like I've been an NHL expert now for well over 2 months. And
you and the rest of Utah.
The rest of Utah. Yep. I have not been into hockey. I have rarely gone to Grizzlies games, okay. Although when I go, I absolutely love it. But the prospect of a hockey team coming to Utah gets me incredibly excited. I can't wait to be a fan, and I can't wait to wear whatever type of gear comes out.
Yeah.
But I need it to be a really cool name.
Okay.
And my favorites so far are kind of, I think one's a little higher than the other. I really like the Yetis.
Ooh.
And I really like the Outlaws.
Okay.
Those
okay.
are my two favorite.
Okay. I am fully with you. I am 100% on board with the Yetis, the Utah Yetis. I did a little bit of research on this over the last week, Adam. As you said, we are all hockey experts now, that last week it became officially official in an event on Friday at the Delta Center right next door, where we had the National Hockey League Commissioner. We had Ryan Smith, Smith Entertainment Group. We had Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall and other dignitaries all come together.
And this is a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Teams don't move that often. Teams
we are
not
getting
sold
the Arizona Coyotes.
And there is a huge amount of excitement here. I believe going into the weekend, Ryan Smith, owner of Smith Entertainment Group, owner of the team, announced that over 22,000 Utahns had already put down deposits for season tickets.
It's incredible. Within just a couple of hours.
Incredible. We also know last week it was reported that there were some trademark applications filed for potential names of a hockey team. We don't know exactly who the group is that filed these or what their connection to the Smith Entertainment Group is, but the names that were trademarked last week are Utah Hockey Club, Utah HC. I think HC is, of course, an abbreviation of Hockey Club.
And I think I represent all of Utah when I say please don't choose either of those two.
Utah Blizzard, of course. The
kind of cool.
The whole 2Z thing, I think, needs to go away. So I'm not a huge
fan
of that.
Except this is like real.
It's too close to Avalanche. I don't know if this is real. It's too spot on to not be real.
That makes sense.
Okay, Utah Blizzard, Utah Fury, and Utah Venom. Those were all trademarked last Tuesday. This is before it was announced that it was official that the Arizona Coyotes of the NHL would be coming to Utah. However, just recently, Utah Yetis was also trademarked.
That's what I like to see.
That is my favorite name. Listeners, if you're confused about the plural form of a Yeti, it is Yetis. You know, it's confusing because Yeti could be perceived as being plural. I've been misusing Yeti. Indeed, Yeti is not multiple Yetis. However, I did a little research over the weekend, Adam, to find out what do we call a grouping of Yetis, like a large group of Yetis. Two different names for the grouping of Yetis seem to be the correct name, and that
I'm
is
like literally on the edge of my
a
seat.
Flurry of Yetis, or
I
a
love this.
Blizzard of Yetis. Those are the
what?
Two grammatically correct names for a group of Yetis. So
you can
Adam,
get both.
I'm telling you, we could have the Utah Flurry. That's a little Dairy Queen-ish, or I'm not sure, but no, I'm sorry, that is McDonald's, the McFlurry. But we could have the Utah Flurry, and the Yeti could be the mascot. Or maybe Blizzard isn't the worst thing after all, if indeed it's a Yeti mascot. And we have to do the Yeti mascot, Adam.
I agree.
We have to. No question. Outlaws. I've heard the name Outlaws bantered about. That also seems to have some support. Tell me about that.
So I want to kind of go back to this a little bit, because if we name our team the Salt Lake City Flurry, it sounds a lot like Slick Flurry. If you abbreviate it, and that can't happen in the state, SLC. You can't do that.
Well, we know the name will be Utah, right? Not SLC.
Which is great. I hadn't heard that.
Yes, true story.
So it will be Utah. Look, the Utah Outlaws, I like the old-timey West.
Yeah, but we were never outlaws. We were pioneers, Adam.
Some people were outlaws. I don't want to. Look, I'm not here to discriminate.
Or in Puerto Rockwell, I guess. Right?
I am just here to be intimidating
to
people as a hockey team.
Fair enough.
Because we can't name ourselves the Utah Pioneers. I mean, we could, but that's not very intimidating.
No, it's really not. Not really. Okay, so according to odds in the gambling world, Adam.
Which I'm all about. Let's hear it.
Here are the odds on favorites for the new hockey team. Utah Blizzard, number one. Utah Venom, number two. Utah Fury, F-U-R-Y, number three. Utah Yetis in fourth place. I don't know that Venom or Fury necessarily are the best fit for Utah. We have some rattlesnakes, but we're not known for venomous, poisonous snakes.
Is that what we're going for here with the venom?
I'm not sure. It's got to be Yetis. Not to be biased, but I am. It's got to be Yetis. So that leads us to the all-important question, Adam. Other than just our incredibly valuable opinions, how will we decide the name?
Well, I know that that Ryan Smith, the owner of the Jazz, the owner of Smith Entertainment Group, the new owner of the team, he has some ideas, and they talked about it a little bit on Pat McAfee's show. And so if we could cue up that clip.
When are we picking a name?
Actually, we're doing a bracket.
Oh, no. Ryan.
Boo.
Ryan.
What? Why isn't that a good thing?
Because AI will come in. You'll get bots that'll take something over. You're getting Soakers whether you like
it or not.
That better be a one seed. Soakers better be a one seed, Ryan.
Hey, we've engaged Qualtrics.
Okay.
I know how to handle the AI bots.
Right.
We're good.
Okay.
And Doubleday, Doubleday and Cartwright, and I think we're going to take this down from like eight all the way down, and the fans are going to vote for this.
Okay, Pat McAfee, that is, of course, Pat McAfee, the host of The Pat McAfee Show on ESPN. He is known for being a little bit...
crazy?
A little bit irreverent, if you will. Yeah, so a fun conversation. I thought Ryan Smith, of course, the owner of Qualtrics, that does write surveys.
This is the type of stuff they
is
do.
Is a business. This is what they do. He knows how to do it. He knows how to protect that process and make sure it's secure. I think a bracket's interesting, Adam. At the same time, with something so important, Adam Gardner, listen, let's let Utah voters pick our next U.S. senator. But when it comes to naming our new NHL hockey team,
something important,
we have to get it right.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I'm worried. You remember the big story years ago where I think it was in Great Britain, they did this big online survey. Hey, you can name our next, our boat,
the Coast Guard vessel, yeah, or the naval vessel.
And
yeah,
they let the public name it. And what a disaster that
Boaty
was.
Boaty McBoatface.
That is what the
that's
public
That's a disaster.
Chose.
I think that's the best name ever. In fact,
and it's hilarious.
Adam, I named my boat Boaty McBoatface.
I love it.
I have a black Utah custom license plate from my trailer that just says Boaty on it. That's a true story. I'll send you a photo. Yeah. I don't know. Listen, I do appreciate that Ryan Smith is going to take his time. He has said that he's going to take
time. You got to get
this
right.
He's going to take the first year or so to really make sure that we get this right. But again, the excitement, the enthusiasm in Utah for this hockey team, also right before potentially getting another Olympic Games, Winter Olympic Games,
we
I think
could
is
have
huge.
Hockey, the Olympic Games, an MLB expansion team. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, perfect for Utah.
Very exciting. Listeners, we'll keep you updated as we know more on that. Of course, you can get breaking news updates as soon as there's a name chosen. You want to make sure that you get a breaking news alert sent directly to your mobile device. You can sign up for those from KSL simply by texting the word breaking to 57500. You'll get all kinds of very important news alerts sent to your device, including, I'm sure, news about Utah's new hockey team. Adam Gardner, incredible show. Thank you so much for joining us, listeners. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow night for more KSL at Night. Thank you for listening.